Ireland applied to be the 33rd team. The absolute joy and laughter the French took out of that. It's just like, who are these guys? How can that happen?
OTB AM, live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
Right, OTB is back for another series of in-depth chats with some of the biggest names in Premier League and Irish football history. We'll have behind-the-scenes access, talking to some legendary names in the biggest clubs, and we'll meet the crucial behind-the-scenes people who make a Premier League club what it is. It's all in association with Cadbury FC, official global partner of Arsenal Football Club. Check out cadburyfc.com for updates on promotions and giveaways. And I'm delighted to say Gerry Flannery is with us. Gerry, good afternoon to you. How are you getting on?
I'm good, thanks, Gerry. Yourself?
Yeah, very well. I'm really interested in this. Your short period at Arsenal, it was it seemed to the rest of the world like it was completely out of the blue. But for you, obviously, it made a lot of sense.
It was pretty out of the blue for me as well. But if you think of it, like I've been just playing professional rugby all my time, living in Limerick for the majority of my life. So to get an opportunity to go over, I initially wasn't jumping at it when it was mentioned to me. But I went over, and when I had a look around the facilities and met some of the guys I knew in the club already, and they just said to me, this would be a really interesting thing to do. So I gave it a go.
You'd done a master's in sports science, I think. Had you finished playing rugby when you were doing that, or were you still playing while you were doing the master's?
I was towards the end of my career. I was injured so much, sure, that I was preparing for, I think it was the 2011 World Cup. Every time I kept getting injured coming up closer to it, I started to go, okay, well, this may not work out for me. So I ended up getting to the World Cup. But then I broke down again at it. So when I came home, I enrolled in a master's in sports performance in University of Limerick because I knew that if I retired, I didn't want to be sort of just cut adrift and you know, kind of lose all structure in my life. So I signed up for that course, and you know, I ended up retiring. And then off the back of that, once I finished that course, then it was when I got approached and asked would I be interested in coming across Arsenal.
And so strength and conditioning, is that what sports performance is? It was a master's in strength and conditioning, effectively?
No, it literally was, as it says, it's sports performance. So it covered everything. There was obviously an element of the strength conditioning side of it, but a lot, there was psychology, nutrition, there was, you know, I suppose the practical elements of coaching, how you run sessions. So it was like, it was the first year the course was run in university in Limerick, and it was quite broad, but it was good for me. Because like I had an undergrad in economics, so you know there wasn't much transfer there.
You know, when it comes to working out the budgets of how much you can actually spend to sign those superstar players, that's going to be it'll stand you in good stead at some point.
Listen, you don't know how low I was down the food ladder there in Arsenal.
Well, you should tell us, because that is, I think, it's going to be really interesting to people who aren't familiar with that part of your career. Before I get to that, though, when you were doing your sports performance masters, was it always in your head that you wanted to get back into rugby coaching? Was that like always the long-term goal, even at that stage, or has that kind of evolved since?
I think it evolved really in that. Like, I knew that I was finishing up playing rugby, and I needed something to kind of like. I saw a lot of my generation around Munster and Ireland. A lot of players all started getting injured and retiring with big injuries, and I saw some lads retire and not really have anything, and you end up. The 2 years post-retirement can be quite kind of floaty because you're trying to find things to do. So I said, well, that's probably going to happen to me. So I said, if I go back to study, at least I'll be upskilling myself and I'll have some structure, which will help me to get through that period of retiring from professional rugby. Whether I was going to go back into professional rugby or what I was going to do, I wasn't 100% sure. And but it ended up... The way the whole thing worked out for me was, I think the Premier League... back in 2012, they had a look. They went through, like, why are they not producing? Why is the national team in England not as competitive as it should be for the strength of the league? And the thing was that there were so many foreign players coming in that they were thinking, how can we help put a pathway there, a long-term pathway for young players to come through the academy systems in the English Premier League and then contribute to the national team? It was called the EPPP, I think, the Elite Player Performance Plan. And what they did was they said, like, to get your funding from the Premier League, all the clubs would have to put in place a head of sports science, there would be a certain ratio of coaches in the academy to players, and that they would independently audit all of the academies, and your funding would be based on that. So when I was a young player playing in Ireland, Des Ryan, who was at Connacht, he took over that kind of long-term athletic development plan for the IRFU. And I knew Des from when I played a couple of seasons with Connacht at the start, and he was very good to me. And all the way through my career, he kind of helped mentor me and stuff. And Des was presenting at a conference, and he was seen by the head of recruitment in Arsenal. And they went, geez, this guy seems like he knows what he's talking about. So Des got brought on board. And you can imagine when someone comes in externally into, like, we all look at the amount of money that's thrown around in football, but it was quite old school back then. And so Des was appointed, and Des was bringing in a lot of change. So Des probably needed a few soldiers around and people that understood the model he was trying to bring in. So he called me and said, would you be interested in coming over? And he said, you finished your qualification or your master's. And I thought about it, and he said, come over anyway and just see the club. So I flew over, and my partner is English. So she was kind of like, this would be good. But she was studying in Ireland. And I went across, and then I met Gary O'Driscoll, Brian O'Driscoll's cousin, who was the national team doctor with the Irish rugby team when I played there. And obviously he was in Arsenal, and Declan Lynch, who was one of the head physios there.
They rolled out all the paddies for you to shake hands with. Oh, it'll be grand.
Yeah.
It'll just be like home.
And Jerry Payton, the goalkeeper as well, was there, the goalkeeping coach. But I met them, and they just talked me through, and they were very frank with me. They said, listen, it's very, very different to rugby here. But it said, you learn a lot. So I said, well, the alternative was I was going to go back to Ireland, and I'd probably just mooch around for a little bit. And I said, this would be something that would be challenging for me. And I went in, and that's how I got into it.
And who were you working with on a day-to-day basis? Like, what kind of age group was it?
I was working with the sort of senior academy. So I would have been working with guys who would have been probably 17 to 21. Some of the players, I would have, you know, Alex Iwobi. Alex Clenford, he moved to Everton, but Alex would have been one. I had a group of players, and you would like be one coach to eight players was the ratio they were working out in Arsenal. So you're working with these young lads, and you're trying to, you know, and it was very different for me, because obviously coming from a different sport, and there's no, you know, if I went back in coaching at Munster, there might be some young lads there who might know who I was, and they give me the benefit of the doubt for a little bit, but I didn't have that in Arsenal. So it was pretty daunting, but it was good for me.
In retrospect, listening to you talk, like, when you mentioned that on the Masters they would teach you how to run a session, it's the type of thing I suspect you think you know when you're doing sessions all the time, but actually when it comes to planning out the session yourself for other people to take, it could be a little bit daunting. It could be, okay, well, that's a blank sheet of paper. How do we actually get it? Where are the cones? Whose job is it to make sure that they're all in the right? And then how do we make sure all the groups? I presume that's like a brilliant crash course for you, where you learn the theory, you've lived it your life, you learn the theory, and then you actually have to go and put it into practice pretty much on day one?
I'd done a little bit of coaching, but not football. I obviously wasn't a technical football coach either. I was working as an S&C coach with over in Arsenal. But yeah, you're 100% right. Like, I found it daunting because all I'd ever known was rugby. And suddenly this is the first ever job that I'd had outside of professional rugby. And I was being thrown in with all these young footballers and, you know, I'm watching all these big name footballers walking around the place, and I'm going, geez, I hope no one asks me what am I doing, because I got to try and figure it out pretty quick. So, yeah, it was a little bit stressful, but it was like sink or swim. So I just had to spend every night reading in the books, coming back, and you know, Johnny O'Connor from Connacht, who was played for Ireland as well. I was friends with Johnny, was over as well. So two of us are kind of in the same boat, and we both bounce things off each other. But it was it was a good learning curve.
It's funny how you said it was quite old school, because the impression certainly was that when Wenger arrived at the late 90s, that he transformed everything and it was totally super modern. But I think it turns out that football is only really catching up in the last 5 or 6 years with best practice from other sports. It does sound like Arsenal at least were very curious about what was happening. The fact that they went and hired somebody from outside the football world meant that they definitely were interested in trying to get the best of what was out there. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it is. Like, it's easy for me to come in from outside and say, oh, geez, football's way behind. But Arsenal were probably ahead of the curve in terms of saying like, right, well, there's a real opportunity here. And if you look at what they've done over the last few years in terms of saying, well, you know, how much the transfer fees are so big now that if you can produce players, like I think Alex Iwobi sold for around 36 million. You know, that's crazy. Like he was a product and there's all these guys like they produced. I was just thinking of some of the guys that were there when came through the academy and I was like, Serge Gnabry is one of the, you know, is an absolute rock star for Bayern. You would have had Hector Bellerin, who's, I think he's gone, has he gone to Inter Milan now? Hector was a brilliant player. He's a phenomenal athlete. Alex Iwobi, Ainsley Maitland-Niles is still there. You know, Emi Martinez. You know, there was all these players. Like, and I remember going down to Hale End, which would have been the very, like, probably the under-9s to under-15s academy. And I remember seeing Emile Smith-Rowe down there. And Des Ryan pointed him out and said, this kid is a serious player. Right. And he was, like, winning all of their fitness tests and Baka and all those other lads. But, you know, but for me, when I came in, there was probably a little bit of resistance because people had a certain way of doing things. You know, it's natural. People don't like change. So when suddenly a big group of Irish lads rock up, Irish ex-rugby players rock up to the training ground and start saying, this is how the day is going to be structured now. There was obviously a little bit of friction to start with, but that was more on the ground level, you know, just natural.
Yeah. Yeah, like, but a brilliant thing for you to go through at that stage of your career when you're watching, because at various stages in your life, you're going to go up against that again in different jobs, no doubt. And it's good to see how people navigate that and what the issues are that they might have when somebody comes in with a new idea, because that's kind of how most businesses and teams operate, right?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. That's accurate. And to be fair, there was never hesitancy from Wenger or from anybody else. It was probably the guys who were on the ground, like your kit man, who's used to the players would come in, they'd go out and play football for 2.5 hours. They'd come in, throw their kit in the bag, they'd have a bite to eat and they'd go home. That would be their day. Now suddenly the players are in maybe a half hour earlier. They're doing monitoring in the morning. Then they're doing some prehab stuff on any weaknesses, any muscle imbalances that they have. Then they go out and the warm-up is taken by the S&C. And then it's a pretty tight session on the pitch with the technical coaches, 75 minutes. They come in, they do some recovery, they get their lunch, then they're down to the gym and they do an afternoon session. So suddenly this, if you're the kit man, your day has gotten twice as long. So like, they're going like, I've never seen so many coaches. How long is this thing going to last? But like the injury rates in Arsenal before I went there were really, really high. And you would have had guys like Wilshere, who was a phenom, people used to ask me, like, what are the players like? I said, well, man, Wilshere trains as hard as anyone I've come across. But like, he probably got chucked into the game when he probably didn't have the base. You know, like if you think about it, football is an early specialization sport because of the skill element in it. Whereas rugby, because of the physical element, is probably a late specialization sport where around 17, 18, you see what kind of players they're going to be. And I guess then that you get a lot of kids who do nothing but play football from when they're 9 years of age. And whilst they might be phenomenally skillful, they mightn't be very rounded as an athlete. So you're trying to add that level of robustness and roundedness so that they can keep staying on the field and that they can, you know, athletically, they're not just good footballers, they're good athletes as well.
And was that part of what the strategy of when you guys arrived in, that you were trying to do like a bit of long-term, we want these to be gymnastically healthy as opposed to just football healthy? And was that one of the things there was a bit of resistance to?
Well, I think it's if people haven't seen it before, then they're obviously a little bit like reluctant to embrace it straight away. But you hit the nail on the head. The idea was that, like, listen, you can dribble a football, you can juggle a football, your first touch is fantastic, you're good with both feet, but you know, when you jump in the air and you have to land, you're not very good at just landing and bracing yourself. You know what I mean? Like, you some really simple things like getting the players to do like small box jumps, they struggled with it, you know, because it's just something they hadn't done. And I think one thing that stood out in my mind was in the academy gym. I remember Des Ryan just put up an awful lot of stuff around Ronaldo, because it's obviously a hard sell coming from ex Irish rugby player saying this is really going to help your football. They're like, well, what do you know about football? But then he would put up a lot of a lot of uh, a lot of images of Ronaldo doing Olympic lifting and, you know, how big he was into his diet and how big he was into recovery. And then the players would come up to you and say, listen, I want to start doing some of that stuff that Ronaldo's doing, you know, which is probably, that's just natural. That's a better way to put it. But, you know, when you think of the amount of money that goes into these players and how, like, how many games they have to play and how much stress is on their bodies, that if they're physically more robust, then they can be on the field more, you get more value for them. And, you know, it's just, it's a win-win for everyone, really.
And was Wenger present, was he around kind of in making sure that everybody was doing what they were supposed to do? Or was it more like if he needed to, he would come down and kind of make sure that everything was going on?
I think Wenger, like, I spoke with my mates in that, like, I can see how Wenger changed the club in that, like, the food, the quality of the food was phenomenal. And, you know, when I spoke to, like, when I spoke to some of the guys who were been in the club a long, long time, they said, listen, it wasn't always like this. Sid Arsen had a massive, massive effect when he came in. Now, a lot of the stuff that Dez was trying to bring around long-term athletic development probably was outside of Wenger's remit, or, sorry, outside of his knowledge base. But he was very interested in how the young players were in terms of their attitudes. He would constantly sit with, Dez, and he would speak to him and say, like, how is this player? How are they behaving? Making sure that they're, you know, because they recruited players to be technically able to play for us. Arsenal had a real identity around how they played the game, but they also wanted to make sure that the players were understood how lucky they were and that they were behaving. And to be fair, Liam Brady didn't, you know, he didn't pull any punches. He was hard on the young academy players if they got out of line, and himself and Wenger were aligned on that.
Okay, forgot Brady was there as well when you were there. That was kind of just coming towards the end of his time there, I think.
I think it was his last year. But right. Like Liam carried a lot of weight, you know what I mean? Like, to the point of you would have coaches who would be out coaching, and I'd give him a heads up. I'd say, lads, you've got 8 minutes left in the session. And then Liam would just walk out from his office and they'd just keep going. And I'd be like, listen, I said, lads, the session's done, wrap it up. And they'd be like, nah. I was like, why? And they said, Liam is over there. I said, so what? And they're like, but they were going on this kind of thing, like, oh, Liam's there, so we want to keep working. And I said, well, the players have been out for 75 minutes now. That's long enough. So they need to get back in.
Right.
And obviously, like, you know, that they didn't take well to taking that from me. But, like, I think that I when you speak to people at the club now, they'll say, listen, it's night and day now. Because, well, like, the likes of Baka and Emile Smith-Rowe, like, those kids now, it's ingrained in them. Oh, they don't know anything better. They don't know anything different than just coming in and just being a pro athlete and a really good footballer on the way. Whereas at the time, we were trying to get kids to work twice as much, and they couldn't see they probably immediately couldn't see the benefit of it.
So it's a change of culture that you're trying to inject into it, and you can see the benefits of it now in the players that are coming through and how ready they are. It'd be really interesting to see what the athletic profile difference between Smith Rowe and Saka is versus the players who were just breaking into the first team when you got there, and the benefits, the long-term benefit of them, the more... How do you describe it? Is it calisthenics, whatever the gymnastics and the stretching and all that kind of stuff? What is that? How do you describe that?
I think it's just their physical literacy, right? You know, just being able to, like, just being robust, being able to play their sport, to be able to recover and to maximize their athletic potential when they're able to play the game. You're not trying to turn them into weightlifters or anything like that. You're just trying to make sure that, like, they cover a huge amount of ground. And, like, they play so much, and they have such short windows for preseason that, like, you know, almost 10 days when they're back from their summer, they're playing matches, and they could play 2-3 matches a week. So it's relentless, you know.
Yeah, look, it's really interesting. And you were only there for a year, right? Was it a full 12 months?
Yeah. I initially had said I'd do 6 months, and my missus is with me, and then she had to go back to Ireland to finish college. So then I was kind of like, I was living up in St. Albans, which is like a quiet little village up in North London. And I had ideas of, oh, it's going to be a great crack when I live in London. But it wasn't, because I was probably, you know, I was drowning a little bit, like, going in, having to study all the time to make sure I didn't make, you know, mess up sessions. But then I was considering going home then, and they said, look, we'll fly you over and back. So I flew over and back then every week. So I would stay, I would get, like, maybe 2 days at home, And then they said to me about staying the following year. But I had been going to rugby clubs. I'd go down to Saracens and go down to London Irish and Harlequins, just keeping my eye in with rugby. And I got an offer then to Anthony Foley rang me up and said that he was taking over as the head coach and said, would you be interested in coming back? So, you know, like when I spoke to some of the lads in Saracens, they said to me, listen, if you get an opportunity to get back into pro rugby, particularly at Munster, you should take it. So then, you know, but otherwise I would have stayed at Arsenal.
And why was that their advice? Because it seems like if you're going to the rugby clubs, you kind of had the intention that somewhere deep inside you, you wanted to get back into it as well.
Well, I used to go down to see what they were doing because I'd watch them run sessions in Saracens. And I'd say, listen, when are you doing speed? He said, we're doing speed with the backs on Tuesday morning. I said, I'd like to get on and watch that because, you know, I've been running speed sessions with the lads in Arsenal. I'd like to see some of the stuff you're doing. It wasn't so much technical. But then the opportunity came to me to get back into professional rugby, and I got back into it probably off the back of probably getting a year's coaching done with Arsenal.
And the benefit long-term of the year's coaching at Arsenal, do you still see it now? Even just having this conversation, it sounds like there's loads of stuff there that you can apply to anything that you're doing in any field in sports for the rest of your career, no matter what job you might have in an organisation.
I was really, really green when I went in there because I'd never had a job outside of professional rugby, but I worked hard at it. The biggest thing I got was, I suppose it is so ruthless. Like professional football is so ruthless, and the kids there become quite cold as well, because you get kids coming in at 14 years of age, a kid from Brazil, a kid from Slovakia. And they come in, they walk into a dressing room, they know nobody, they go out and they play a trial match, they know they're being assessed, and then they could be gone out of the club the following week. That the guys that are there, you know, like you start understanding how important it is to actually develop a relationship with the players in the club. Because they don't know, like trust is a big part of it, and that's the same no matter what sport they're playing, they're all human. And you know, I suppose I still stay in contact with some of the lads there, and I've good time for them. And I probably went over with like the idea in my head that footballers are spoiled and they make so much money. But the guys that make the money, probably it's equivalent to winning the lotto, because the failure rate in football is pretty high. And like if you failed, if you're trying to make it as a professional rugby player and you don't quite get there, if you got into an academy in Ulster and then you got released, you're generally 22 years of age, you probably have some sort of degree or diploma under your belt and you understand about grafting. But for a kid who doesn't make it in football, like they could be out of school at 14. They may have stopped listening in school when they were like 11 or 12, because everyone keeps telling them they're going to play for England. And then they get to 16, 17, then they're told, no, it's not happening for you. And that's a very different scenario to when you're, you know, six years older and a bit more mature in rugby. So you kind of feel a duty of care to try and help those young lads understand what it is to have a work ethic, because a lot of them were just guys who were out playing on the streets with their mates nonstop, and they were brilliant footballers, but it was never a deliberate practice element of their week. They just played football. They were very good at it. They mightn't have had a huge work ethic naturally. So you're trying to teach them and say, listen, like, if you can't make it here, if you've got a work ethic, you'll make it somewhere else.
You obviously had to have that deliberate practice work ethic going as somebody who had a very technical function in the rugby team, both as a scrummager and as a line-out thrower. So that just had to be part of your makeup, as well as the physical intensity of playing the sport. Is that something that you were able to kind of learn and take from the year at Arsenal as well, that like there are people who don't have that, who don't have that work ethic and who don't have that understanding? And as a coach, did it actually give you the opportunity then to have a bit more of a helicopter view of what it's actually like to work with a group of people, some of whom are going to listen to everything, to every single thing you say and take it all on and go and do exactly what you say, and some of whom are like, this guy's talking a completely different language from me?
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. And like, if I had gone and retired in Ireland and went straight back into coaching with the academy in Munster, a lot of the academy players would probably, you know, probably give me the benefit of the doubt when I'm coaching, because they'd be like, oh, I remember him; he was playing there a couple of years ago. But when I with the lads in Arsenal, like, you have to generally have to build a real strong relationship with them to get to say, listen, I want you to succeed. And these are the things I think will help you along that way. I said, listen, I don't know enough about football, but I know what you need to do to be the best athlete you can be. And if you apply yourself really well, you'll get somewhere. But the players won't take that on board unless they trust you. So, and you've got guys from all different parts of the world. You've got all different cultures, and none of them had any interest in rugby. So that was something that, you know, I had to work on to develop those, build those relationships. And it's something that stands to you now. You know, it's still the most important part of coaching is building a relationship with the player, so the player actually believes in you and trusts you and that you're consistent with him.
I was going to say, like, it's weird how the world works, you know, back in London with Quinns now, having the experience, even just the day-to-day experience of what life was going to be like and making a good decision about where you want to live and all that kind of stuff. The benefit of that year, in retrospect, seems to be kind of weirdly very, very important.
Yeah. I suppose the thing is with sport is like, it's not, you don't always get a chance to stop and reflect, that's the important thing, is where you kind of go, what did I learn from my time in Arsenal? And for me, a lot of it was around, okay, I've got to be sharp around, like, I've got to be consistent with the players. If I say this is what my expectations are for them, I have to hold them accountable to that. And I have to be, you know, on that all the time, because if players don't know what to expect from you, then they don't develop trust. And doesn't matter what sport you're playing in, that happens all the time. So it was a good learning curve for me. It was hard at the time. I can't say I massively enjoyed it because I didn't have much of a social life and I was just working all the time. And it's such a big club that you wonder, does anyone really notice that you're working this hard? Now, Des Ryan was great, was really, really good for me, and I learned a huge amount there. It was good.
Yeah, look, it's a brilliant story. Thanks a million for sharing it with us, Jerry. And continued success. We didn't even get into how well things are going at Quinns at the moment. But, you know, I think everybody's definitely keeping a close eye. And thanks a million for talking to us today.
Okay, thank you, Jer.
It's Jerry Flannery there. We're here with thanks to Cadbury FC, official global partner of Arsenal Football Club. You can check out cadburyfc.com for updates on promotions and giveaways. And that's about as in-depth an insight into how things are run behind the scenes at Arsenal, I think you're ever going to get. So make sure you stay tuned to the rest of our social channels for the rest of the Arsenal goodness. You can check out Robert Pires, you can check out Katie McCabe as well. And we'll have loads more coming in future too.